Just over 4 years ago now, Iran shot down Ukrainian International Airlines flight PS752. On board were 55 Canadian citizens, 30 permanent residents. Many people were Iranian nationals who had moved away, who had gone home for the Nowruz holiday, for a time with family and friends. They were taken out of the sky by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, a group that many believe is a terrorist organization, but one that the Trudeau government has so far refused to designate as such. Since that time, a voice has emerged from one of the oddest places, the backbenches of Ontario's legislature. Goldie Gamari, an MPP who represents a rural Ottawa riding, suburban and rural, you might say, in Ottawa Carleton, has become one of the strongest voices on this issue. And then over the last several months, as we've been dealing with the protests and the counter-protests against the Hamas terrorist attack against Israel on October 7th, she has stepped up even more, an Iranian-Canadian standing with Israel to defend what she believes is the right thing. Many people are noticing, and that's why we want to speak to Goldie Gamari today. Goldie, thanks for the time.
Thanks, you, Brian. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's not a shock to me that you're being so strong on this. I met you probably about 8 years ago when you were just getting into politics, when you were more on the activist and less on the elected side, but also have known you since you were first elected in 2018. But what is it that makes you stand up and, as you're doing this week, speak out against executions of dissidents in Iran like Reza Rezaei, or speak out against those who are celebrating Soleimani, the terrorist general that was taken out by the Americans, 4 years ago?
So I think for me, it's really important to speak out against this because, you know, even though I'm a provincial politician and, you know, international foreign policy or government affairs, intergovernmental affairs isn't really within the provincial jurisdiction, you know, as an Iranian Canadian, as someone whose parents came to Canada in 1986 to escape an Islamofascist brutal dictatorship, given that now I have this platform, I kind of feel it's like it's almost like my responsibility, my obligation to speak out against this, because what we're seeing happening in Iran isn't just affecting people in Iran; it's also impacting Canadians. Like, for example, just like you said, with the Islamic regime in Iran shooting down Ukraine flight PS752 4 years ago, killing 55 Canadians and 30 permanent residents. I mean, that impacted Canadians. We're also seeing reports coming out by
dozens of families.
Dozens of families. I mean, so many people. And, you know, everyone was impacted. Everyone knows someone who was impacted by this. And here, even in Canada, we're seeing the RCMP come out and confirm that there is foreign interference happening by the Islamic regime in Iran in Canada. We're also seeing a report, a news report from CBC recently that came out saying that the CBSA has not only blocked dozens of Iranian officials connected with the IRGC from entering Canada, they're also investigating at least 100 people in Canada with ties to the Islamic regime in Iran.
Let's talk about your backstory then. You mentioned your parents came to Canada in 1986, but so did you. You were born in Iran and came here at a very young age. I'm not trying to give away your age here, Goldie, but you came here at a very young age and were raised in the suburbs of Toronto.
It's public. I'm 38.
Well, let's talk about that, about not about your age being 38, but this, you know, why did your parents come to Canada? Why did they decide that, you know, Iran, which had undergone the revolution in 1979, why did they feel that they needed to escape to somewhere like Canada, in the Richmond Hill area outside of Toronto?
Well, so we have to go back to, I guess, the 70s. My dad actually left Iran as a teenager to go to Texas and got his degree in electrical engineering at Texas Southern University in Houston. And he lived there, and he got his master's degree there as well. So he lived there for close to a decade. And after he was done, and when he went back to Iran, the Islamic Revolution had already happened. So you can imagine how different the country was for him, you know, having lived in Texas in the 70s, and then going back to a country that was very, very different than one he had left. And initially, he did try to make a life there for himself. He married my mother. I was born. But just the conditions were not good. There was also the Iran-Iraq war happening at that time. And there was just no safety. And he just said to himself, there's no way that I can raise a daughter in this sort of society that mistreats women. You know, he can't raise a daughter in a society that puts people in jail and, you know, just discriminates and is just, you know, a brutal dictatorship. So he decided that.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, if we can expand on that point for a moment, I think most of us will have seen the photos of what Iran was like in the 70s before the revolution and how women dressed, how women interacted in society compared to after the revolution. I mean, your mother prior to 1979 had great freedom, and after 1979 had next to none.
100%. I mean, I see, I always enjoy seeing old family photos from before 1979 because it looks like a photo that could have been taken anywhere in Canada, in Europe, in the States. You know, people were dressed just however they wanted to dress, and people were free. Like, that was the thing. Like, women were free to wear the hijab or not wear the hijab. You know, like in my old family photos, you know, there were some who did, you know, wear a headscarf. But again, it wasn't like the full on sort of black chador that we see right now, which is just sort of overshadowing and over blanketing, you know, the entire woman. But there was a lot of freedom. Like, there, you know, there's pictures of female MPs, you know, dressed fantastically, like just so fashionable. You know, you look at pictures of people on the beach, you know, women in bikinis. There were theaters, there were clubs, there were lounges. It was basically just like going to any other European country. And after 1979, all of that changed. The entire thing changed. And it just went from a very free, liberal, secular, democratic society, which is something that the Shah of Iran at the time had worked very hard on to sort of modernize and secularize Iran from the 50s to the 70s and bring Iran up to sort of a Western liberal standard. But after 1979, not only did it go back in time, it went back almost like 1,000 years in time to where, you know, now, for example, a woman is not allowed to leave the country without the permission of her husband. A woman is not allowed to go to a soccer stadium and watch a game. Women are not allowed to divorce without the consent of their husband. Like, it's just, and these are just.
But I bet it doesn't go the other way.
100% not. Of course not. Of course not. You know, there's a term that we refer to it. Like, what's happening in Iran, it's basically a gender apartheid. It's a gender apartheid. And the reason that the Islamic regime in Iran goes after women like this is to control and subdue and divide and conquer, basically. So, you know, think of The Handmaid's Tale. If you think of The Handmaid's Tale, sort of similar to that in the sense that women have absolutely zero rights. And I mean, you've heard about the morality police, right? The morality police are these groups of plainclothes mm-hmm. people, and they basically go around in unmarked vehicles and unmarked vans, and anyone that they feel who isn't dressed properly, they can grab and take away and, you know, do God knows what to them. And that's exactly what happened to Mahsa Amini September of last year in 2022, where she was dragged away for not wearing the compulsory hijab properly. I mean, she was wearing hijab. And then, you know, she was perfectly healthy.
But it just wasn't worn properly.
Yeah. The whoever arrested her at that time just decided that she wasn't wearing it properly, which, you know, again, it's so like there's no laws there. There's nothing like that. So they dragged her away and she was.
And for that, she was beaten to death.
Exactly. She was beaten to death. She was in a coma for several days. And then, unfortunately, she passed away. And, you know, that kind of trickles back to why I'm so outspoken about this, because I look at what's happening in Iran. I look at Mahsa Amini. I look at Reza Rasai, who we don't even know if he's been executed. But, I mean, we're waiting for news to come out. Everyone is sick to their stomachs about this. You know, I look at the people on Ukraine flight PS752. I mean, that could have been me. That could have been my family. That could have been my brother, my cousin, right? So that's why I'm also really outspoken, because what they're doing, what the Islamic regime is doing to the people of Iran, we look at this and we think that could be any one of us. And if we don't speak out, we could be next.
You know, a lot of people could say, well, that's just Iran and we don't need to have that bothering us here in Canada. So why talk about it? But Goldie, I was writing a column the other day on the anniversary of the takedown of PS752. And I said, here's why we need to start speaking out more about the Islamic Republic of Iran and the regime in Tehran. And that is because they export death and destruction everywhere. And it's not just the taking down of a plane with 55 Canadian citizens and 30 permanent residents. It's they're exporting war to Yemen, where they're doing a proxy war, backing the Houthis against another group backed by Saudi Arabia. They exported war and destruction to Syria, where they're backing the Assad regime. They are the key supporters of Hezbollah in Lebanon, which has turned, you know, a beautiful country and a capital city that used to be known as the Paris of the Mediterranean into a place that nobody wants to go. They were the key backers of Hamas when they launched their October 7th attacks. And you made mention of this, and I want to hear more about it, the ongoing political interference and harassment of Canadians in this country. This is one of the reasons that the Harper government cut off diplomatic ties with Iran, is they said, your diplomats are doing nothing but harassing Canadian citizens. Wasn't the only reason, but that was part of it. And they said, you're out. You're not welcome here.
Yeah, 100%.
The Trudeau government, in my view, has been extremely naive in trying to make up to Iran since 2016, late 2015 when they took office. And in the 4 years since PS752 was shut down, they haven't been very strong at all. So tell us what's happening in the Iranian-Canadian community, whether it's in the Toronto area or in Vancouver or elsewhere. Because, you know, my understanding is there have been kidnapping plots uncovered. There have been murder attempts. That on top of just the daily harassment that's basically telling you to shut up or else.
Yeah, I mean, where do I start on this? You know, it's interesting. I remember the day that I became a staunch conservative. I remember the day that I stopped voting left, because, you know, the saying goes, you know, when you're younger, you vote with your heart. When you get older, you vote with your mind or your brain. I actually remember the day that I became a staunch conservative. Do you want to take a guess, Brian?
I actually can't.
That's okay. So you actually mentioned it. So when Stephen Harper shut down the Iranian embassy in Ottawa was the day that I became a staunch conservative. Because at that point, I felt like, finally, there is a government that understands what Iranian Canadians are going through, that realizes the significance of the threat of the Islamic regime to Iranian Canadians, and is actually doing something about it. And for me, that was the day that I was like, okay, like this, it's go time. Like, I started voting conservative after that, and, you know, started paying a little bit more attention to politics and what's going on. I was actually in my, 2012 would have been my third year of law school. So, I became conservative towards the end of my education, which is, just a good thing, I think, for me, because, you know, with the way universities are being taught, you know, these days.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other topic. So the threat is real. The danger is real. There are, many Iranians are afraid to speak out because of the fact that their family is still in Iran, and the Islamic regime has no problem in going after people in Canada by threatening to put their family members in jail or actually putting their family members in jail in Iran. There is no due process. There's no rule of law. The kidnapping plots, 100%. That is a real thing. We see what happened in the States with Masih Alinejad and the FBI. In Canada, recently, just a few months ago, there's an Iranian-Canadian journalist.
Well, tell us a little bit about that.
So
tell us a little bit about her, because she has spoken about what Iranian dissidents in Canada deal with compared to her.
Yeah. So Masih Alinejad is an Iranian who lives in the United States. She has been very outspoken about what's happening inside the Islamic regime in Iran. And I just want to qualify this, you know, within the Iranian diaspora, there are those who view her as, you know, maybe trustworthy, maybe not, but that's besides the point. I think that's irrelevant, but I just want to put it out there for any Iranians listening. But essentially what happened is she's been very outspoken against the Islamic regime in Iran. And the FBI actually informed her a couple of years ago that they had thwarted a plot to kidnap her. Apparently they were going to take her by boat to somewhere in South America and then fly her over to the Islamic regime in Iran so they can deal with her. So now she is under pretty much 24/7 FBI supervision. Within Canada, there are a number of individuals who are currently at risk or being monitored and supervised by security officials and RCMP because they recognize that there is this threat, this imminent danger. Just in the news a few days ago, or I think it was last week, it came out that the Border Services Agency for the United States actually caught an Iranian who was trying to get into the States at the border. And apparently this Iranian is connected to money laundering schemes for the Islamic regime in Iran, in Canada. So that's something that's being dealt with. And people go, okay, well, money, so what? But we have to think about where this money goes, where it's being funded, how it's being used. The Islamic regime in Iran is the biggest.
Well, it's money laundering so that they can fund terrorism.
100%. They are the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. You mentioned Hamas, the Houthis, Hezbollah, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban. There's also Nigeria. And Africa as well. I mean, I don't know if you've heard about what's happening in Nigeria. There's a huge massacre happening there right now. Nigerian Christians are being massacred. And interestingly enough, after October 7, on October 14, the Islamic regime in Iran invited the top Shia cleric of Nigeria to go visit them in Tehran. And they had a meeting to talk about how they can continue to expand Shia Islam in Africa and the Middle East and around the world.
We've got to take a quick break here, Goldie, but when we come back, I do want to ask you about not only your activism on this file, but speaking up against what the folks in Iran call the little Satan. You have been very strong in support of Israel since the attacks on October 7th, and you face backlash over that. So I want to talk to you about why you're standing up for it and the backlash when we come back. In the wake of the October 7th attacks, Goldie, you decided to start speaking out not just on foreign affairs matters as they relate to Iran and Iranian Canadians. You were speaking out in support of Israel. You have posted videos, you have documented what you say are examples of anti-Semitism on the streets of, one of your, I use the term in air quotes, colleagues, NDP, former NDP MPP, Sarah Jama, taking part in a demonstration that went up Bay Street in Toronto celebrating the attacks of October 7th. You have spoken at a rally at Queen's Park where police told you, you know, you should really shut this down because this is not safe. You're not safe here. So we can't protect you. So you should stop. Well, you didn't. We'll get into that. But why is a woman from an Iranian-Canadian family with a Muslim background standing up for Israel at this time when so many people would say, well, that just doesn't make sense to me?
So the history between Israel and Iran goes back thousands of years. 2,700 years ago, Cyrus the Great, who was the founder of the Persian Empire, released the Jews from their Babylonian enslavement, and he took them back to the Promised Land, helped them build the Second Temple in Jerusalem, and provide them with soldiers and protection. And, the Jewish people were also able to live in the Persian Empire freely. And ever since then, there's always been a very strong friendship and connection between the Jewish people and the Iranian people. Prior to 1979, there were over 100,000 Jewish Iranians living inside of Iran. And they had the same freedoms that everyone else had. After the 1979 Islamic Revolution, when the Islamic regime took over, everything changed. There's a really fantastic movie called September of Shiraz, and it's based loosely based on the story of an Iranian Jewish family during the 1979 revolution. What happened to them? How the Islamic regime seized all of their assets, tortured them, and then basically they had to escape the country with just what they were carrying on their backs. For 44 years, 45 years now, the Islamic regime in Iran has said that the United States is the big Satan and Israel is the little Satan. When you want to talk about indoctrination, for 45 years, they've tried to indoctrinate Iranians. Saying death to America, death to Israel, it's not a meme, it's not a joke. That's literally what's chanted in schools. They make school children chant that. They put on these state-sponsored protests, quote-unquote, where people chant death to America, death to Israel. And, what happened on October 7, this genocidal massacre by Hamas, it was so horrifying. But for the vast majority of Iranians, not just around the world, but inside of Iran, we knew exactly where this was coming from. We knew this was coming from the Islamic regime in Iran. They have an agenda. They have a vendetta. All this talk about the Zionist regime and Zionist propaganda or whatever the case, like all that language, that ideology comes from the Islamic regime in Iran. In fact, the Islamic regime in Iran, 1 week after the revolution, they created Al-Quds Day, which is basically an anti-Semitic hate fest that is, celebrated by Islamic regime radicals in not just in Iran, but in Canada, which to me is actually horrifying. But, after the October 7 massacre, the hashtag Iranians Stand With Israel started trending on X and on other social media platforms. Iranians were going out in droves to support and speak out. And that's because we are not the enemies of the Jewish people. We don't hate Israel. The Islamic regime in Iran, which is fighting Israel, is also fighting Iranians. So, we're on the same side. And we understand that the money and the funds that are used to arm Hamas is blood money stolen from Iranian people. So we're basically fighting the same fight, the same enemy. And in fact, during the Mahsa Amini protests, there is only one country in the world, one country in the Middle East that stood with the people of Iran, and that was Israel. Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. In fact, our crown prince, or Shah Reza Pahlavi II, he has visited Israel in the past. We know that if we want peace in the Middle East, the key to that is not just to eradicate Hamas, but is to go after the head of the octopus, which is the Islamic regime in Iran.
You've documented some of what you've seen in the protest, because they go right by your office, they go by, you know, close to where you live when you're in Toronto, and you've posted on this on various social media. That's caused some headaches for you with claims from National Council of Canadian Muslims that you're Islamophobic. What's your answer to that?
I'm not Islamophobic. I am Islamofascist phobic, I guess, if you want to say. I will always call out terrorism. I will always call out anti-Semitic behavior. I will always call out hate. You know, something that was really shocking for me is when October 7 happened, there were people out in the streets celebrating, not just in you know, and I'm not talking about Gaza, I'm talking about Toronto, I'm talking about Mississauga.
I was there, Canada. I watched
it. That was just very shocking to me. And on October 9, as I was walking my dog, I was shocked to see and it wasn't a protest, it was a celebration rally. Like the advertisement for that rally said, come out and celebrate our martyrs, glory to the martyrs. I mean, this was well before Israel even came up with a response or defense of that brutal massacre. People were out there celebrating, and Sarah Jama to be in that celebration to me was just very, very shocking, because it was just so hateful, so just vile. I mean, that's the kind of behavior I would expect to see inside of the Islamic regime in Iran by the Islamic regime, not Iranians, because the difference is inside of Iran, there has not been a single spontaneous demonstration from Iranians. In fact, after October 7, Iranians were putting up flags of Israel all around Iran in support of the people of Israel, because they know where this is coming from. And yet in Canada, we're seeing people who were celebrating Hamas.
Let's just define the term Islamofascist phobic. So are you talking about people who use Islam in a very harsh political sense, a very strict interpretation of it in a very political way, as opposed to the religion that, you know, I know that you do not practice, but that some of your family members still do?
The vast majority of my family members still practice Islam. Like, my grandmother is a devout Muslim, and she is one of the kindest, purest, sweetest women that I know. And she does not hate anyone. She does not hate Israel. You know, the vast majority of Muslims are not like this at all. Like the vast majority of Muslims are not like what we're seeing out on the streets with that hateful behavior. The vast majority of Muslims are just like everyone else. They just want to live a regular, normal life. I mean, there's no hatred. There's nothing like that. But again, so the Islamic regime in Iran is Islamofascist, and I'm going to define that. So the word Islamofascist in Farsi is velayat faqih. Now, what is it? It's basically fascism, but with a religious angle to it, because what they have done is they have created this quote-unquote guardianship of the juristic council, where they have a supreme leader. In this case, the supreme leader is Khamenei, and they believe, quote-unquote, that the supreme leader is the word of God on earth. So any sort of law within the country, anyone who runs for office, any courts, anything whatsoever, has to be approved by the supreme leader. So anyone who says, oh, it's a democracy, oh, there's like elections, it doesn't matter. It's all bogus. And what these people have done, I don't think they're Muslim. I don't think they're religious. But what they have done is they have taken the religion and they have politicized it in order to legitimize their control and authenticity, I guess you want to call it, over the people. It's basically a brutal dictatorship, hiding behind the face of quote unquote religion. But that's why I always want to make that distinction, because you know, it's, I'm not speaking about the religion. I'm speaking about the political ideology that is using religion to export terrorism around the world.
Let's talk about change in the regime in Iran. Is that possible? And are there things that Canadians can do to help? I know there's been, you know, pressure on the Trudeau government to list the IRGC as a terrorist entity, something that they've refused to do. Although, you know, at the recent 4-year anniversary of PS752, the Prime Minister said, we'll look into it. There have been attempts at street protests, including after the brutal murder of Mahsa Amini. There were attempts about a decade ago, and I remember people calling on the Obama administration to get behind the dissidents. Is there an actual dissident movement in Iran that could bring about change? Because this has been, as you say, a long 45 years of a brutal dictatorship.
So I'm going to answer that in two parts. The first part is the best way that Canadians can help Iranians and also help themselves and help keep their own country safe is by putting pressure on Justin Trudeau to put the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is the paramilitary branch of the Islamic regime in Iran, on the terror list in Canada. Because what that would do is that would effectively prevent the Islamic regime in Iran from doing business in Canada. It would allow the Canadian government to seize assets, to freeze the funding, you know, put them back on the sanctions list. That would be the best way because, you know, Iranian people, they're not asking for World War III. They're not asking for anyone to get involved militarily. But what they are saying is stop enabling the terrorists, stop meeting with them, right? Like, why did, I still don't understand this. 1 month after Ukraine flight PS752 was shot down by the Islamic regime in Iran, 1 month later, Justin Trudeau is meeting with the foreign affairs minister at that time, Javad Zarif, shaking his hand, bowing his head, smiling, laughing, taking pictures with him. And when I saw that, I was sick to my stomach. And I was thinking, how is this even possible? How is it possible that the Islamic regime shot down a plane, killing over 50 Canadians, and a month later, you're out there shaking his hand? Like, shame on you. Shame on you. But he did that. And I don't understand why. And he still refuses to put the IRGC on the terrorist list. He's just sort of dragging it along.
Is it just them being naive?
I don't think so. It can't be naivete at this point. It simply cannot be. Like Iranians, we've been sounding the alarm on this. No, I don't think so. I think there's something else going on. I don't know what it is, but I think there's something else going on here. If I had to make an educated guess, look at the number of Iranians that are immigrating to Canada with money.
The term that I've heard used for that is that officials with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps are snowwashing their money in Canadian real estate and capital markets. That was the phrase used by Shuvaloy Majumdar, who used to be with the MacDonald Laurier Institute, now recently elected MP from Calgary for the Conservatives. He's been speaking about this for years, and he says they've been snowwashing their money in Canada, and then they're allowed to live here. So, and this is something that once exposed, I'll give full credit to Global News, they did the yeoman's work on this. Well, then the Trudeau government started saying, oh, we'll look into it. But they knew about it for years because people were talking. And you've got one of the leaders of the police in Tehran living in Canada, working out at the gym, next to women who are dressed in ways that he would have them beaten for in his old job. This just seems like we've closed our eyes to the reality of what's going on.
100%. I mean, that guy, that terrorist working out at the gym, not only would he have them beaten, he would have them executed. Like, that man is responsible, or I shouldn't say man because he's not human, that terrorist is responsible for, you know, the deaths of 40,000 people, if not more. Like, it's just, it's horrific to see these people here. And I don't think it's naivete. What is the answer? I don't know. I think Shiv Majumdar is definitely onto something. again, like until someone actually goes in and officially looks at it. But I mean, within the Iranian community in Canada, we know, like, it's just, it doesn't make sense for certain people to come here with so much money and they just buy these $1 million homes and these, you know, $1 billion assets. I mean, where is this money coming from? What's being done with it? So it's very concerning. It's very shocking. And they're also coming here and keeping tabs on Iranian Canadians here. So in that sense, it's very shocking.
Do you think that part of the foreign interference that we've discussed earlier is why the Trudeau government is the way it is? And I'll point to 2016. I was in a scrum with Stéphane Dion, who was still Justin Trudeau's foreign affairs minister, and he was talking about the need to improve relations with Russia, saying that Stephen Harper had ruined relations with Russia and we really should be improving them with Vladimir Putin. It was shocking to hear then, and it's even more shocking now in hindsight. But he said the same thing about the Iranian regime, and he said that it was naive and ideological what Harper did, kicking out the diplomats. A short time later, Dion is in a meeting in Richmond Hill with people with connections to the Iranian regime. And that meeting was facilitated by an Iranian-Canadian Liberal MP. Is this a case of the Liberals being captured by the dark side of diaspora politics on this file?
I know exactly which Iranian-Canadian MP you're talking about. I'm not going to bring his name up because, you know, we all know who he is and what he's like. He's actually the one who also tried to, he also created a petition to try and reopen the Islamic regime embassy in Canada and, you know, showed his true colors that way. I don't think for Trudeau or Dion, this is about diaspora politics. I would say for them, the most logical thing for me, if I had to make an educated guess, would be they just care about the money. You know, if it brings money in, if it's, you know, good for their pocketbooks, I guess. I mean, I can't see them really thinking about anything else other than money here. And, you know, given some of the economic migrants we've seen coming from Iran, I mean, that to me is the most logical thing. And again, it's shameful. It's very shameful. But, you know, I think with the Liberals federally, the writing is on the wall. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, pretty much every single Iranian would have been a Liberal. But now it's pretty much the opposite. And every day, more and more, when I go out to events, whether it's in Ottawa or in Toronto or anywhere else, Richmond Hill, and there's Iranians there, the one thing that I am predominantly hearing is we are never voting Liberal again. We're never voting Liberal again. And I think that's why Trudeau is now sort of maybe realizing, okay, maybe I misjudged this. And I actually do think that he's been playing politics with Iranian people, Iranian Canadians. And I have a feeling that prior to the next election, he's going to put the IRGC on the terrorist list in order to win back some of that Iranian vote. And if he does that, you know, shame on him for playing politics with the lives of Iranian Canadians. Shame on him for playing politics with the blood money of the people of Iran. Because I think even if he does that, people will realize it for what it is. And I don't think they're going to vote for him. He's lost all confidence for Iranian Canadians.
It will be another example of Canadian foreign policy being driven by diaspora politics, which is sadly what Trudeau has reduced our foreign policy to. Goldie, there's so much more that we could discuss. We could keep talking for a lot longer, but I thank you for your time today. And I know I'll continue to follow you on social media and what you have to say. And I encourage the audience to do the same. Thanks for the time.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Full Comment is a post-media podcast. My name's Brian Lilly, your host. This episode was produced by Andre Prue with theme music by Bryce Hall. Kevin Libin is the executive producer. You can subscribe to Full Comment on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Amazon Music, anywhere you get your podcast. Listen through the app or your Alexa-enabled devices, and you can help us out by giving us a rating or leaving a review and telling your friends about us. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Brian Lilly.